from the nation's capital. This is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Seipstedt. Ladies and gentlemen, the topic for today, video visiting and corrections. It's an extraordinarily important topic. We have two experts by our microphones from the National Institute of Corrections. Maureen Buell, she joined the National Institute of Corrections in 2001 as a correctional program specialist and leads NIC's Justice Involved Women Initiative, assisting jails, prisons, and community corrections in the development and implementation of evidence-based gender-informed policy. By our microphones from Brooklyn. Brooklyn is represented in the House today by Allison Hollihan. She is a licensed mental health counselor and holds a master's degree in urban policy analysis as a program manager for the New York Initiative for Children and Incarcerated Parents at the Osborne Association. She advocates for policies and practices that support children of incarcerated parents. She has a background in this issue of video visitation. I'm going to read from a report, rather comprehensive report done by the National Institute of Corrections, and we're going to talk about that report today. Research confirms that incarcerated individuals, corrections, families, and communities all benefit when incarcerated individuals can communicate with and receive visits from family and supportive community members. Video visitation is an additional form of communication that can build and strengthen social support systems for those incarcerated. And to Allison and to Maureen, welcome back to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.
Allison, I'm going to start off with you after that long introduction. What is video visitation?
Sure. Well, video visits, very simply put, is very similar to Skype. You know, it helps families remain connected to their incarcerated loved one. It first was seen in the correctional setting in the 1990s, and with technological advances, it's really resulted in a lot more user-friendly and affordable equipment. So as a result, it's really expanding at a rapid pace in a correction setting. In fact, recently there was a Prison Policy Initiative report that stated that the video visiting is being used in over 500 facilities across the nation, and we expect that it's going to continue to expand.
And Maureen, what is the interest of the National Institute of Corrections in terms of video visiting?
Pretty simply, our role is working with our constituency, which is the jails, prisons, and community corrections across the country, and to improve outcomes, that is, to reduce recidivism and some intermediate outcomes. And certainly, for those folks that are incarcerated, maintaining contact with family broadly defined, community members, community services, is really fundamental for people to get back on their feet.
The bottom line, the question goes to either one of you, the bottom line is the more contact people have with their families and significant others, important people in the community, at least important to them, is the more contact they have while in prison or in jail, the better off they're going to do upon release. Can I say that?
I think you can say that, and I think one of the things that we're trying to achieve as well is for folks to, so we can really separate them from the criminal justice system and have them become part of the community.
Well, part of the community means a lot of contact. And when I was in corrections, one of the things that really amazed me is that whenever we had an opportunity in the state of Maryland in the correctional system for people coming in, visiting, complaints went down, infractions went down. It was a very peaceful prison. People would do anything on the face of the earth not to interfere with that in-person contact. Does video visitation have that same impact?
You know, Leonard, that's a really good question because we don't know. It is such a new practice. There has been very limited research on whether or not video visiting alone or in combination with in-person visits will actually lead to or build upon the positive outcomes that have been linked to in-person visiting that you and Maureen have just mentioned.
The name of the document is called Video Visiting and Corrections Benefits, Limitations, and Implementations Considerations from the National Institute of Corrections. An extraordinary document. I mean, anywhere from questionnaires to implementational policy to everything you ever wanted to know about video visitation is in this document, and I'll put the link in the show notes in terms of the document. We have, according to the document, 13 states that are doing video visitation. Is that correct?
Yes, and I anticipate at this point it's probably more than that because this document, the research was done approximately a year and a half ago at this point, so it's surely more.
Now, 2.7 million people are in prisons and jails on any given day. That's a huge number, 2.7. Let's think about that for a second. 2.7 million people in prison and jails in any given day, correct?
That's true.
Okay. So we have, just as one example, according to the report, 14,000 children in foster care as a result of incarceration. So that's 14,000 people totally without any contact with their mom or with their dad at all. That's just one example of the potential of video visitation.
Yes, and I want to add to that that on any given day, there are 2.7 million children alone that have an incarcerated parent. And when you add on those that are under some type of community supervision, it goes up to 10 million. So this is a huge issue, not only for incarcerated individuals and budgets, but for children and for the next generation of children who are being cut off from their parents.
But you did mention a study in the report itself talking about reductions in recidivism based upon the amount of contact that they had within prison, correct?
Yes, absolutely. There was a recent study done by the Minnesota Department of Corrections, and it looked at 16,000 incarcerated individuals and looked at how visiting impacted their success and recidivism rates. And it found that even one visit alone reduced the recidivism rates. And it really underscored and added to what we know about visiting that it's important for incarcerated individuals to receive visits throughout the incarceration and not just right prior to reentry to be able to support their success.
You know, running institutions, correctional facilities, in the 14 years that I was with the Maryland Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services, we had three correctional systems. Those visits, contact with the outside world meant peaceful institutions. So we're not just talking about video visitation. We're not talking about necessarily doing the right thing. We're also talking about reducing cost. We're also talking about improving security. We're also talking about the possibility of reentry planning. We're also talking about the possibility, even though this is not the focus of this report, video-based instruction. I mean, so this is meaningful to many people for many reasons, and that's why I wanted to expand conceptually what it is we're talking about.
I think one of the things that for NIC to have jumped into creating this document with Osborne Association was that one of the things that we are aware of is that we know how important in-person visits are. We also know that there are some challenges for families to be able to travel to facilities, for getting there and finding out that a visit has been canceled. And so I think that video visiting sort of has come on the forefront. But I think the thing that we really want folks to be aware of that are thinking of either adopting video visiting or enhancing what they have is to really know what it offers, what it entails, what they're getting into, what the costs are, what the benefits are. It's not a panacea, but I think that this guide really provides a lot of thoughtful questions and opportunities to really take a look at this. Does this fit for your system?
It sure does. I mean, the document is amazingly comprehensive, right down to the questionnaires, right down to the surveys, right down to the implementation policy. So it's not just a discussion document on video visitation. It's if you want to consider doing this, if you want to do this, it's all encapsulated within this one document.
Nicely said. Thank you.
Do you like that?
I do.
Thank you.
All right. Let me get the website as long as I've intrigued people. www.nicic.gov is the website for the National Institute of Corrections, and you can find the document there. It'll be in our show notes. Allison, go ahead.
And I wanted to add, certainly there are a lot of benefits of using video visiting to kind of bridge the gap for families that are so far away that they can't travel to the facility, or maybe they're elderly and they can't get to the facility. So there are a lot of benefits, but there's also challenges for families. Some families do not have the money to have their own computer. They don't have the technological savvy to be able to navigate signing up for an account. You know, I'm just thinking about my grandmother who has trouble navigating how to turn the computer on, let alone using it to schedule time. Also, there is the challenge with some video visits when they are home-based. There is a cost attached to that. And so any money or savings that may have been incurred from not traveling to the facility may be outweighed by the expensive costs and all the service fees that are tacked on to this home-based video visiting. So there's a lot of considerations that need to be looked at before moving forward.
Well, that's the sore point, because I've seen newspaper articles from throughout the country and here within Washington, D.C., that video visitation was put on by a private company that charged fees that people thought were too high. So, okay, so the person cannot afford to make the 300-mile trip between gas and tolls and spending the night and taking all the family. It's a $200 or $300 proposition, but still, that video visitation may be one tenth of that, but it's still something that they can't afford. Isn't that part of this discussion?
Yeah, absolutely. And also consider that most of the places where video visiting is being implemented currently are at the county jails. And when you're looking at those families, they're not traveling nearly as far as those that are going to go visit their loved ones prisons in the state. So their travel costs are significantly lower. And in some cases, the challenge is that the jails are actually requiring people to come to the jail, visit at the facility. In almost every case, there's no charge for that. There's only a few jails that are still charging. But still, you know, the family is going through the burden of getting to the facility. They get there, and then they don't actually see their loved one. Mm. And that really matters. It matters for families, and it matters a lot for children.
Because we do want in person wherever possible. But, I mean, in the District of Columbia, if you commit a violation and you're sent to prison, even though it's a D.C. code violation, we're a federal agency. Those offenders are sent to federal prison. They could be all throughout the country. If there's not video visitation, then they're not going to get any visits at all. So this issue, I understand, Allison, your point about it could be the local jail, but also at the same time, that person could be 1,000 miles, 3,000 miles away.
You know, I think that that's one of the considerations in putting the guide together, is that there are so many different permutations. You know, you may have folks that are more immediate to a facility. You may have the example that you just gave, Leonard. But I think that, you know, a site that is thinking about adopting this really needs to weigh those considerations. And I think one of the things that's in the guide as well that's very interesting is, you know, even talking to the folks that will be using a system like this, whether or not video visiting actually is going to be something that they use. And I think one of the other things that we're well aware of is in the guide as well, that there are a number of different types of video visiting. And I think Allison alluded to that earlier.
Well, Allison, go ahead. Give me those types one more time, because I don't remember.
Sure. So there's three basic models. The one that was really kind of best practice and can address a lot of challenges is the hybrid model. So you have in-person visiting and you also have video visiting. Mm-hmm. So it gives families the opportunity to choose what's best for them. Mm-hmm. Then there is the three actual different kind of ways to use the equipment. So you can have the facility base, which is where the video is at the facility, usually at some outside area so that the families don't need to go through security, and they're set up in rows and banks, and the families go there and visit. They're usually free visits, or at the very least, they'll have one or two free visits a week, and then additional visits they'll need to pay for. Mm-hmm. Then you have the model where the corrections will partner with a community-based organization. And there's a lot of advantages to that partnership, because you're then having families come to the community-based organization to video visit from there. And if you're partnering with an organization that provides services to the incarcerated while they're on the inside and upon their return, and support to the families, then you're really able to get the families in early and do that kind of continuum of holistic services and start working with that organization to support the incarcerated individual's reentry process.
But the bottom line, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then the final model would be just the home base. So that is where people can video visit from their home base computers and in some cases their cell phones or tablets. And those are almost exclusively paid for fee.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that would be the holy grail, would it not, the idea of having that level of contact? Because you have to have a security provision, I'm assuming, in all of this, because, you know, ostensibly the whole idea is to sit down a child and mother reuniting over the course of 500 or 600 miles through a home-based system. But inevitably there's going to be somebody who's going to, you know, instead of the child, substitute that child for a gang member. So there's got to be some security component in this, correct?
Well, there's software that can monitor the visits, so you can do live monitoring, which is certainly labor intensive. You know, we've heard concerns about there being people being inappropriate during visits, but for example, in Oregon, they've been using video visiting in their state system for at least a couple years now, I believe, and they've found that they've had a 0.15% incident rate. So that, in the grand scheme of things, is so nominal that we're really not seeing that be the concern.
Well, I do want to talk more about that in the experience of other states, but before we get into the second half, let me reintroduce both of you. Maureen Buell from the National Institute of Corrections. We have Allison Hollihan, and she is with the Osborne Association. Let me give out the web address for the Osborne Association, and I'll hold it up closely to see if I can read it correctly. It is www.osborneny.org for the National Institute of Corrections. It's www.nicic.gov. The document itself is called Video Visiting in Corrections Benefits Limitations and Implementation Considerations. It's a completely comprehensive document, and NIC should be congratulated for doing it. So where do we take the conversation from here? You just mentioned what state, and it was only 1.5% incidence of a security violation, Allison?
It was the Oregon Department of Corrections, and it was actually a 0.15%.
0.15, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty daggone good.
Yes, and you know, with the software, they can flag certain words. If certain words are said, they can automatically stop the feed. And you know, there's always going to be a concern that the person who is supposed to be the visitor isn't truly the visitor. But in most cases, it's grandmas and moms and children that want to have these visits with their loved ones. So we really need to look at the larger picture before jumping to the fear that this is going to just increase communication with the wrong people.
Let me throw out a hypothetical that is not on anybody's question sheet. If we had the level of contact, wax philosophical for me a little bit, Allison. If we had the level of contact where, you know, instead of now a mother or a father or a brother or a significant community member, instead of the once a year trip to a prison 200 or 300 miles away, or maybe a twice a year trip to that prison, if they were in touch with this individual almost every day, from, say, the comfort of their own home through a computer where that information could be exchanged and information about when are you coming back, what are your arrangements, where are you going to live, and having these discussions fleshed out beforehand, where are you looking for work, are you going to go back to school, what difference would that make, Allison?
A tremendous difference. I want to speak to the importance of children, just because that is definitely my area of specialty. When we run a program here at the Osborne Association for children to come to our office, they come to a child-friendly setting. It's set up as a living room. They connect with their parents who are in an upstate prison 10 hours away. So just as you had used as an example, these children may visit maybe once a year because it's a 10-hour trip. Mm-hmm. And now that they come in for monthly, sometimes a couple times a month, visits. They do televisits. They're able to do their homework in the visits. They're able to show their mom their spelling words and their math problems on a chalkboard. They have the same books here as the moms and dads have in the facility, so they can read together. And these are experiences that you can't have on the phone. You know, the parent can't see the child stand in front of a measuring stick and see how they're growing from visit to visit. So we find that it's just so critical. because then the children are able to make sense of their world. They're able to have that additional support that is so valuable for them. They're able to physically see that their parent is safe and doing well. And then they are able then to go and visit once, twice a year, hopefully more, to have those important in-person visits. And so that's very critical for children.
Maureen?
You know, Allison, as you're talking, I was just thinking of an example that you were telling me about. And, you know, that is when a small child, 3-4-year-old child, gets on a telephone and is just holding a telephone and really doesn't have any kind of a face in front of that child, that there's really no conversation. And so the beauty, I think, of systems who do have video visiting is that they see the person, they see the parent. And I just think that that's something we often don't think about with sort of the current systems that we have.
I do want to point out to our listeners that my agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, is a pioneer in terms of video visitation. We do quarterly, and it's an all-day affair, and we have a network of prisons throughout the Federal Bureau of Prisons that participate in this, a Community Resources Day, where we bring in people from all throughout the community in terms of alcohol, substance abuse, housing, jobs, you name it, and we do this all-day seminar. And that's recorded, and we send it off on disk plus a workbook to every prison that could possibly hold D.C. offenders. Mm-hmm. So we've been involved in the issue of video and communications within correctional facilities for a long time. We also are piloting a experimental program where we do hook up female offenders in prison with their children from the District of Columbia area, but that's in its early stages. But that's what we're doing. What is the future? Either one of you, in terms of video visitation.
You know, one thing that just occurs to me is, and I've been, you know, doing criminal justice work for some time, and one of the things that I think I'm well aware of is that historically our focus has been just on the individual that's incarcerated. Mm-hmm. And I think with the emerging research and the best practices, one of the things that we realize is that for people to be successful, they've got to have these connections. I mean, it works for us in the free world. Why should it be any different, you know, for an offender that's, you know, within the criminal justice system? So I think that if folks become pretty knowledgeable about how critical it is to maintain and build those healthy connections, I think that, you know, pairing in-person visitation with technology such as video visitation, I think that the opportunities, I think it's unlimited, really.
Well, they are unlimited. I did a television show where on family reunification, hosted a show, and one of the things that is really profound is all the kids that are left behind. And they feel abandoned. We know from research that they have higher degrees of problem in terms of substance abuse, in terms of involvement in the criminal justice system. But they're 8, 9, 10 years old. I mean, they didn't ask for this. So they feel completely abandoned, completely separated from their incarcerated parent, at least in this case, not looking at security, not looking at safety, not looking at recidivism, not looking at the benefits to the criminal justice system, but in terms of the benefits to the kids, it would probably be enormous.
You know, absolutely. I mean, we do know from some research and definitely from, you know, observations that we have here through our programs that connect children with their incarcerated parents, that visiting really minimizes the trauma while increasing the supports for children. And it allows children to have very important conversations about why are you there? When are you coming home? It helps for healing. And we find that the children that are able to maintain a connection with their incarcerated parent and children who have appropriate supports in the community, they go on to thrive and do wonderful. It's actually only a small percentage of these children with incarcerated parents that do go on to have some of these challenges that you mentioned, and it's a really real concern. But we have an opportunity here to support these children so that they can go on to have bright, healthy futures.
But, you know, it's interesting. That's a conversation that nobody has. The kids caught up in all of this, nobody seems to focus on them at all. And they do feel completely left alone. They feel completely ignored, and this would be a way of looking at that. Where do we go to for the future for video visiting? I mean, is this going to be something that's going to expand throughout the entire country? Are we going to start using tablets, start using home computers? Are the correctional systems going to be more accepting of this? Map out the next 5 years for me, either one of you.
Yeah, I believe that it is inevitably going to be in every facility at some point. And, you know, the question is it going to be implemented in a thoughtful way that balances the needs of corrections and families, or is it going to be driven by companies out there that are trying to make money by charging for the visits and putting big service fees on the families, which will in the end be kind of counterproductive, right? Because we're going to have families that used to be able to go for free visits at the county jail that now aren't able to visit as often because of the fee. So I think that if it's done in a thoughtful way, it could increase connections for family. And I also think it's going to be a great benefit to the reentry planning process. We didn't speak much about that, but just think about being able to bring families into a case management conference with the incarcerated individual prior to release to determine how they can be a support. Think about the transitional housing director who can come to a facility or community organization and have an interview with somebody who's incarcerated 5 hours away from the area where they're returning to, and then have that the housing resource ready for them before they're released. You could have job interviews. You could have interviews with treatment providers. I mean, the possibilities are endless.
Well, that's just it. The possibilities are endless, and we're just barely scratching the surface in terms of those possibilities. Everything that you just mentioned, Allison, should be on the table. Now, my question is, and anybody listening to this program is going to be, well, if it's of that degree of importance, if it's at that level of importance, we haven't even discussed the medical angle to this and where this could really cut cost for states by millions of dollars in terms of video consultation on medical issues, then why do we have to rely upon private providers at all? Why doesn't government simply pick this up if it's so important to so many people for so many reasons?
Well, thinking from the importance of in-person visits just for visits, think about the importance of a doctor or a nurse doing triage to be able to physically see and touch that person. So I think that there's definitely room for having consultations or simple follow-ups, but it can never replace the importance of the medical community being able to interact with a person.
True, but my question is more along the lines of the fees that are being charged. The fees are private companies or some people who are objecting to the fees. They say that they're too high. If it's as important as we're making it out to be, why wouldn't government pick up the cost of it lock, stock, and barrel? And eliminate the fees entirely. That's unrealistic in today's budget-cutting era?
Well, that's a hard question. I mean, it's hard because, I'm just looking at sort of the environment that we're living in today, in terms of politics and budgets and all sorts of things. So I think what we really were interested in is having both criminal justice systems and users of systems like this just to be, thoughtful consumers and to really know what the potential and the possibilities are, but really know the right questions to ask and the right things to consider.
And that's exactly what the document does.
That's what we hoped for.
It's very comprehensive. Allison, did you want to have a quick follow-up? We're just about out of time.
No, I think that the main takeaway here is that we should never look at video replacing in-person activities, no matter what it may be, anywhere from visiting to telemedicine. And we need to be thoughtful about making sure that the fees associated aren't counterproductive and just reducing the ability for incarcerated to maintain their connections with their family.
Some people are exuberant about this possibility. They suggest that it could really fix a lot of the problems within corrections. So they would be even more enthusiastic than you. Maureen, final comments?
Well, I think that's why we called the document Benefits, Limitations, and Implementation Considerations.
just to cover all bases.
You got it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we are doing a show today, did a show today on video visitation in a correctional setting. Our guests today have been Maureen Buell from the National Institute of Corrections and Allison Hollihan. She is with the Osborne Association. The document itself, as Maureen just said, visiting in corrections, benefits, limitations, and implementation considerations, www.nicic.gov, www.nicic.gov. Again, this program was produced today by Donna Ledbetter, and we always appreciate her production assistant in terms of putting these together. The inner website for the Osborne Association, Allison Hollihan's organization, www.osborney.org. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We appreciate your comments. We even appreciate your criticisms, and we want everybody to have themselves a very pleasant day.